go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broken, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. I am John Schmelk. That's Lance Meadow with you for the next 1 hour talking some Giants football. We do have a guest coming up later in the show. Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com will join us at 12:30 as we continue to preview every single Giants matchup on their 2015 schedule. Paul did the Redskins and Falcons yesterday, and Need and I did the Philadelphia Eagles on Tuesday, and today we have the Dallas Cowboys. Before we do that, guest, though, we want to give you a chance to get on the phones at 201-939-4513. You can call in, talk about anything you want with the New York Football Giants. And I'm sure you're going to want to talk about Jason Pierre-Paul. I'm sure everyone saw the stuff that came out yesterday. Now, again, the Giants have no comment on any of that. Nothing of that is official. It's all speculation and hearsay. Anything regarding how much time he's going to miss, if he's going to miss time, right now is a guessing game. And I know you guys have complained a little bit the last couple of days that, oh, well, you're not talking about the reports. Well, this is a good reason why. And Lance, when Anita ran on Tuesday and the reports were generally out there that, you know, the injury was X, Y, and Z, and then 2 days later it turns out to be the exact opposite according to these still reports, the information out there is exactly that. It's information, it's reports. You don't know what the deal is. But, you know, obviously it's a big deal. The Giants are monitoring it. And when they have something official and they know what's going on, they'll have a statement. We'll have it for you here as well. But I think the one thing about the situation, Lance, that I think is a positive for the Giants is that the defensive line might be, aside from wide receiver, one of the deepest positions on the roster.
Well, they were very aggressive in free agency and then through the draft at least bringing in some players. I would agree that Spags can rotate. Now, the positive is, from a defensive perspective, Steve Spagnuolo is known for not relying on four defensive linemen throughout the course of the season, John. He wants to get eight. He wants to get sometimes nine guys involved. So, you know, depending on what the status of JPP is moving forward, everybody else was still going to be contributing throughout the course of this season. Demontre Moore, you know, the opportunity right now is staring him right in the face for him to continue to further develop. Robert Ayers now back fully healthy. Another opportunity for him to be a guy that could pick up where he left off last season and getting to the quarterback and helping stop the run. Double O has a golden opportunity now to step into, John. You know, those are three players that I think can really jump off the box score throughout the season, and I haven't even mentioned some of the defensive tackles who, you know, Jonathan Hankins, let's not forget, John, last season, what jumps out to me is the fact that he proved he's not just a run stopper, he's not just a guy that's going to eat up space, he can get to the pocket, and he can collapse the pocket, and he can get to the quarterback, and if he can also take what he did last season and improve upon that, he had seven sacks, he was up there right behind JPP, you know, that also will help to build some continuity and consistency on the D-line.
And while we don't have any additional information on what's going on, you can give us a call and talk about the Giants' defensive line, how the Giants move forward, and things of that nature in regard to Jason Pierre-Paul. So if you want to do that, you can reach us at 201-939-4513. And Lance, look, we all know the pass rush has to become more consistent this year. And I think that was an issue last year with the Giants. We saw the first, I don't know, 8 to 10 weeks, I'd say. I don't have the last year's schedule up here anymore. But the last 6 or 7 games, the pass rush stepped up and you saw a change. Now, again, you understand the competition that those games were against, and that obviously has to factor into it. But if you can get that type of production over the course of an entire season, they finished 5th in the NFL in sacks with 47. With Steve Spagnuolo blitzing more from the linebacker and safety position, you want to have as many guys that can get to the quarterback and win those one-on-one matchups as you possibly can.
Well, you want consistency, John, which is what you just alluded to. I just brought up the numbers. 47 sacks last season, 4th in the NFL. But here's the thing. 28 sacks in the last 5 games. 19 in the first 11. So if you're Steve Spagnuolo, you're looking at those numbers, John, and you're saying, hey, we finished with a respectable number. Okay? It's not as if we weren't getting to the quarterback, but we don't want it so lopsided this season. Now, sacks to me is a very fluky statistic.
I
don't think you could pencil yourself in, okay, we're going to get 4 or 5 every year. I think, though, what you can hope for, John, is consistency throughout the season, meaning getting to the quarterback, quarterback hits.
Hurries,
all
exactly.
of those things. Correct. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully, obviously, the sacks will be on par with that. But if you are Spags, once again, you want to see every single game you have the same aggressiveness. You want to be on the same page as a defensive line. And I think that is something that is a realistic goal. You know, also take into consideration JPP, 9 sacks in the last 5 games,
yep.
3.5 in the first 11. So he sets the tone for the rest of the team. You want the individuals that know how to get to the quarterback to have a little bit more consistency, and therefore the rest of the team should feed off of it.
Well, and again, look at the quarterbacks that they play in those final 5 games. They had Blake Bortles. They had Zach Mettenberg. You had Robert Griffin III. You had, God, who was the Rams quarterback in the game? I don't remember.
They had about 5 different guys that they were rotating last season.
Was that Hill in that game?
No, I don't think it was Hill. Hold on, I'll look up that game.
Who was the starting back for the Rams in week 16?
Let's take a look here.
I don't even remember. I got to be honest. I have no idea. It was Sean Hill, right?
It was Sean Hill.
I think it was Sean. See, that's what I thought it was, too.
Well, they used a few guys, but let me just double check. I'll bring up the box score right now just for confirmation.
I hope I'm right.
Sean Hill was in the mix, but then he got hurt.
But then I thought he came back at the end of the year.
I just want to confirm that he did come back. All right, came back for that game.
There we go.
24 of 32 in that game for 290 yards and 2 touchdowns with an interception.
And then Mark Sanchez was the 5th quarterback in that last group. So, you know, it's a far cry from the Andrew Lux and the Tony Romos and guys that you had earlier in the year. But again, and this is going to be one of our 30 questions in 30 days, Lance, whether or not the Giants will have more sacks this year than they had last. Paul Dottino, in our video portion, said yes, he thinks they'll break the 50-sack barrier too. My answer was no. But while they'll have fewer sacks, I think they will have more consistent pressure game to game on the quarterback. So I think overall the pass rush will be better, but the sack numbers will be a little bit down. That's where I went with it.
Well, I think they'll have more than they did this season. I'm going by a few numbers. Number one, Spags had the top-ranked defense in sacks 1 year in his first stint as defensive coordinator, and then they were sixth. They had over 50 the year that they led the NFL. Now, it's a different set of players, so you can't assume that everything's going to translate.
That's correct.
That's why you take those numbers, and I think you only put X amount of substance into those numbers because you have to understand, obviously, the depth chart and the personnel has changed. But I think given his aggressiveness, John, his approach, how he likes to utilize personnel, I think it does bode well that with an improved pass rush, that the Giants should be able to have a little bit more consistency. And I think getting, even if it's 48 or 49, is a realistic number to achieve.
Sure. No, I think they'll be in that ballpark. I think 50 would be fantastic, but I think it's hard to get to 50. Like you said, sacks can be fluky. You can put a great pass rush on.
Very difficult.
But if you're facing a great quarterback, you know what? They're going to get rid of the football, and you're not going to get those sacks. So they can be very, very temperamental from year to year, those sack numbers. 201-939-4513. We keep talking about this or anything else New York football. Giants, again, Mickey Spagnola, DallasCowboys.com, coming your way at 1230. Your calls until then. Max in New York will lead us off. Max, what's going on, pal?
All right.
What's up, Max?
Hey, just to piggyback off your point, first off, I actually think that as much as pressure is important, then I think that they need to put a lot more focus on stopping the run. You know, they've shown you can put pressure. Last year, our pressure was pretty good. If you look at how it ranked, as you guys accurately said, you know, our pressure wasn't bad, but if you can't stop the run, you know, especially against some of these talented running backs, it doesn't totally matter. Also, I just wanted to ask you guys, kind of unrelated to that initial point, just where you feel like right now, especially, I guess, with the Pierre Paul thing, the Giants are at, you know, would you say they're a bubble team looking in at the playoffs, you know, maybe further than that because of maybe some of the injuries they've endured? So I'll see how you guys feel about that.
Well, Max, appreciate the phone call. I've said this time and time again, John, and we have discussed this. First of all, I think at this point you can only look at the Giants within the division. Now, right now, it is very premature to know exactly how the rest of the NFC conference is going to play out as well as the AFC. And the goal is, the easiest way to make the playoffs is to win your division. I look at the division right now. We're going to hear from Mickey Spagnuolo a little bit later on. He'll give us a better picture of the Cowboys. If I were to rank offenses, I'd say the Cowboys and the Giants, on paper right now, have the two best offenses in the division.
1 and 1A, I agree. And I could see either team being better. And if Victor Cruz is 100% healthy and the Giants' offensive line plays well, I can think the Giants could easily be number one.
The Eagles have a lot of upside, but they do have question marks because of the health of their quarterback and some of the young guys that have been brought in
youth
to complement
and wide
that quarterback.
Absolutely. A lot of youth at wide receiver.
Matthews last year, who had a good rookie year. They just brought in Aguilar.
Josh Huff.
Correct. So you don't know exactly how those players are going to pan out, and a different dynamic in terms of the backfield without LeSean McCoy. Then you go over to the defensive side. The Cowboys were opportunistic last season. I would not classify them, John, as a shutdown defense.
No, I think yardage-wise, they're around, what, 17th in the league, something like that?
Middle of the pack.
Yeah.
They made up for it because they had a knack for taking away the football, and their offense kept the defense off the football field.
Absolutely. And that, by the way, is the staple of a Rod Marinelli defense.
Correct. Very opportunistic. If you go back to Tampa Bay, Detroit, and so forth.
It's more of a bend, don't break, don't give up the big plays, and
good
try
way to
force
to
turnovers.
It. I would agree. Then you look at Washington's defense. They've got a new defensive coordinator.
Who the heck knows?
So we don't necessarily know what's going to happen. They've got a revamped secondary. Secondary had a rough time last season, and they were inconsistent in terms of getting to the quarterback. There's
young guys getting older, they could be a little bit better
Correct.
In the secondary.
And they lose a Brian Arakpo. I know he was hurt each and every season, but that's still a presence on the defensive line.
Nice front seven,
in terms
though.
Of linebacker.
They have a nice little front seven on defense.
They do have, but, you know, guys have been in and out of the lineup.
Well, Hatcher's been hurt.
That's the problem.
Kerrigan's very, very good. You've come the young linebackers there. I think they could be a pretty good front seven. But again, like the Eagles, their secondary is a question mark.
But if I'm Washington right now, I'm hoping my defense sets some tone, given the fact that you don't know what you're going to get out of RG3.
Who are they bringing as their defensive coordinator again?
Joe Barry.
Thank you.
So that will depend on how the defense plays out. Question marks. Then you look at the Philadelphia Eagles on defense. You know, they were very effective getting to the quarterback, but they also had to revamp their secondary, John. Last season, gave up a lot of big pass plays down the stretch. That's the reason why they didn't make the playoffs. I like what they've done with the secondary. I think they brought in some key guys, but, you know, it depends on how well that group gels. So the point I'm making is there's a lot of question marks across the board on defense.
Absolutely.
And the Giants are included because the safety group is very young. We don't know about the health of John Beeson, whether or not he's going to play a full season. Now, I do like the depth on the defensive line. And obviously the Giants have arguably the two best corners in the division.
But the depth behind those two guys might be a little shallow.
So, you know, the Giants are up there in terms of the question marks, which is not a bad thing, the reason I'm bringing that up, to answer Max's question, because that means that everybody's in the same boat. So in terms of at least the play out and the layout of this division, now I think the Giants have a very good shot to be competitive and be in the mix to win this crown. And I also like the fact that there's been a great deal of turnover in this division, too, every year, John. It's very difficult to win back-to-back division titles because there's so much parity in this league.
In fact,
so
the last time that happened was what, the
good.
Eagles in the mid-2000s?
I had to go back. I think the Eagles were the last. I don't exactly know the timetable, but I believe
that.
Philadelphia was the last team to do it back-to-back.
It's got to be, right? I don't think the Giants won the division back-to-back years. Dallas didn't win the division back-to-back years. Washington certainly has. And it's got to be the Eagles under Andy Reid with McNabb, right? I'm not sure how you would look that up.
Well, I'll look up the Philadelphia Eagles depth chart in terms of their year-by-year breakdown, and then we'll go from there to the tournament.
939-4513.
When they did that last.
As Lance looks it up, let's go to Marcus in Philly on line number two. Marcus, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Hi, Marcus. Good morning.
I'm just calling. I actually have a question and I guess a comment. My comment first. I know you guys are going to get a ton of stuff about JPP, so I'm not going to even go really into that. But I'm a person that tries to look at the silver lining of things, and I think we have a bunch of defensive ends that, while JPP gets healthy, will get a chance to get on the field and show what they have. I think that's, you know, the positive in it. I'm trying to look at the positive in it, that at least we'll get some of the young guys, give them a chance, to Montre Moore and Double O and, you know, the veteran and Joy Selby, and then get, you know, give us a chance to see what they have. And also, I know, like, on offense, people say that schemes, you know, work, and a lot of times you may have, you know, subpar players on offense, but the scheme works. And I believe that with Spags' defense, it can really help a lot of the young players on the defensive line and help them get us some sacks and get some pressure and everything. So I don't think that one person makes the system work. I think, you know, with a plethora of different players, it can definitely be effective. What do you guys think about that?
Well, Marcus, I think schemes can help. They certainly can. But in my opinion, in the end, X's and O's are great, but the Johnnies and the Joes are a lot more important. And you can have the best scheme in the world. You can have Tom Landry as your defensive coordinator, Vince Lombardi as your offensive coordinator. If you're running out players that aren't as good as the players on the other team, you're probably not going to win. Now, does that mean that coaching doesn't help? No, of course it helps. And can Steve Spagnuolo and the way he brings creative blitzes help some of these giant pass rushers? Absolutely. But at some point, the individual on your team has to beat the individual that he's going up against, whether it's a wide receiver against a corner or a defensive lineman against an offensive lineman. That's what made the Giants' defenses under Spags so good the first time he was here, because he had a bunch of defensive linemen, Strahan, Tuck, JPP. Those guys could beat the offensive linemen they're playing one-on-one.
And I just have one more question, and I'll get your comment right here, and that's about scouting. Now, throughout the years, we have been blessed to get a lot of great, you know, defensive tackles in Barry Colefield, Linfield Joseph, we have Jonathan, you know, the D-tackle now, his name just alluded me.
Hankins.
Right, Hanks. But the scouts that do the scouting for the D-line, are these the same scouts that do – I know they have different scouts, but with the offensive line, because we have some talent on the O-line, but a lot of the offensive linemen throughout the years, we've actually had some misses on with the James Brewers and you know, guys like that. And I just want to know, the scouts that do the defensive line, they've got some gems throughout the year. Are these the same guys that do the scouting for the offensive line? I'll take you guys' answer off the air. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling, Marcus. No problem. Yeah, it's the same guys. I mean, they don't split it up by position. They split it up by region. So each guy will scout their region, southwest, south, northeast, midwest, mountain, west, whatever. And they'll scout every player in that area. Now, when they come back, the position coaches will look at the tape as well, give their own opinion and grades on these guys, but it's the scouts that do the region, scout every player in that region, no matter the position. So, yeah, it's the same guys. And Lance, one thing I'll point out, he mentioned all these guys that have hit the defensive line, maybe some of the guys in the offensive line that haven't worked out. Look at where they were drafted. I mean, I think up until the last couple of years when you had Richburg and Flowers and Pugo, generally speaking, the Giants used higher picks on defensive linemen than they did on offensive linemen. And I think that's why you probably had more hits on that side of the ball.
I think that's a fair trend to note, especially in recent years.
Well, Linval Joseph, JPP, Hankins. I mean, all those guys were high draft picks.
They were high draft picks, and obviously they contributed immediately.
Mosley, Brewer, those types of guys, those are day three picks. And as Jerry Reese likes to say, those guys are hard to hit on. That's why they're day three picks. They're not days one and two picks. If you get one day out of that day three where you're like, oh, this guy can really play like a Devon Kennard, you're thrilled. Like an Andre Williams, you're thrilled. It's hard to find those hits on day three.
Well, in fairness, John, I think you can also counter to bring up the fact that the Giants have done pretty well with undrafted free agents.
That's true.
So if you're not necessarily going to strike gold with the sixth and seventh round picks, the way you make up for that is through undrafted free agents. And it's funny because one of the 30 questions in 30 days, part of the feature that's up on Giants.com as we get you set for training camp, is about, you know, who may jump out as an undrafted free agent this year and make the roster. And, you know, part of my research was I was going back, John, over the last few years to determine which undrafted free agents made the team. And, you know, believe it or not, there's a pretty good trend. Almost every year, about two guys you pencil into the roster on the 53 that are undrafted free agents. So I think the Giants have done very well compared to other teams in terms of finding some gems who are just given a call after the draft and say, come on down, and all of a sudden they carve out a role for themselves.
201-939-4513. Mickey Spagnuolo, DallasCowboys.com at 1230. Until then, your calls, packed lines. Len in Columbia, Maryland. Leonard, how you doing today, my friend?
Oh, God, hanging in there, and trying to stay positive on the Giants.
Of course.
And, I mean, we don't have much choice, do we? We've got to try to stay positive. You know, just a quick word. The Giants really don't have to say anything. There's only two circumstances in which the Giants have to make a statement. One, JPP signs the tender. Two, JPP, we've removed the tender on JPP.
Len,
other than that, there's nothing to say.
You're absolutely,
absolutely
right.
Nothing.
Yeah, because right now he's not even under contract with the team, and unless there's some type of move on the contractual status, the Giants are under no obligation to say anything. I think you're absolutely right about that.
Well, it's not even right to say anything. Whatever you say might be of a negative point, and it could hurt the guy down the line long term, you know, whether he's with the Giants or not with the Giants, either one.
Well, Len, I think the other thing, and I didn't mean to cut you off, and you know, John touched on this off the top, but it's a very fluid situation because things tend to change day by day. So, you know, the minute you put yourself out on the record and then all of a sudden new news comes your way the next day, obviously it could contradict one another. So that's another reason why there's a benefit sometimes to just wait, make sure there's clarity from all angles, and then determine what you want to do.
Yeah, and I personally, I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for the Giants to make an announcement, because I think there's only two things they can say. He signed, or we picked up the tender.
Well, and Len, the bottom line is that we're going to know something by the 15th, because by the 15th,
yeah,
if the tender's there,
go.
The tender's there,
yeah.
And if the tender's not there, it's
yeah.
not there anymore. So we're
yeah.
going to know by the 15th, contractually, what the situation is, one way or the other. By the 15th,
yeah.
we're going to know he's either an unrestricted free agent because the tender's gone, or he's going to either hold out and not get paid this season, or he's going to play under
right.
the tender. Those are the only
right.
three options you're going to have by the time July 15th comes along.
There you go. There you go. One other point. You know, it's hard to talk about the defensive line and sacks without saying, is JPP included or is JPP not included in your discussion? I mean, Lance, I don't know how we can talk about more than 47 sacks unless we say JPP is going to be there. I don't see the rest of those guys, and they're professional football players. They belong in the NFL. Now, unless Spagnuolo is a real genius, and I don't think he's a genius. I think he's a terrific coach. I don't think he's a genius. I don't think they can get to 50. I wouldn't bet the mortgage money unless I knew JPP was going
to
be there.
You would have to manufacture an awful lot of sacks if you don't have a double-digit sack guy that can get those sacks in one-on-one situations, which JPP is one of those types of guys, Len. You would have
to
manufacture an awful lot of those if he's not on the field for an extended period of time.
Well, I would agree with that. And I would say, you know, if we want to talk about number of sacks, I frankly would say without him next year, I'd be happy with 40. With him, I'd be happy with 50.
Well, let's see.
Hey, we're just going to have to wait and see on that particular matter.
Last year,
but
Len,
listen,
40
think,
sacks. Last year, 40 sacks would put you at tied for 13th, which would put you right in the middle of the league. Good job looking that up.
Yes. Yeah. And I think with Spags and with the guys we have, and again, you know, a lot of this is based on hope. You know, you start saying, I hope DeMontre Moore is, you know, healthy. Hankins stays healthy. You know, we get something of a pass rush out of Selvey. You know, those kinds of things. But I think it's possible. And look, you know, let's not mistake this. Without him, I mean, it's a loss. I mean, there's no question. I'm not saying the season's lost. I'm saying that's a huge loss. But look, I think Jerry has assembled some parts on that defensive line that can keep us consistent. Now, maybe we're going to need one more score on the offensive side before the season's over. Every game, we're going to need one more score. We're going to need to keep the ball just a little longer. But I think if you look through 9 or 10 guys on that defensive line, Lance and John, I think all of those guys can play in the NFL. I think every single one of those guys can make 53-man rosters. And I don't think that's a stretch at all. He's done a good job of assembling some parts. Now, can we make up? But I think it was all about JPP being there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to give you at least my background, Len, I'm going under the premise that he is going to be available when I say that you could get about 50 sacks. I mean, I'm not speaking for John, but that's what
I was going under.
You're right.
Okay.
You take him out of the equation, in fairness. You know, let's talk about your hypothetical.
Yeah.
In 2011, remember, JPP misses 5 games. The Giants were 25th, they were tied for in the NFL with 34 sacks. So clearly, when he's not in the equation, Len, I think you bring up a great point. The team does take a hit. Now, remember, that was a different defensive coordinator, so you have to also take that into consideration.
Right.
And I think the way you make up for that, if he does miss some time, is that you try to get your linebackers a little bit more aggressive, which Spags has done in the past, and you also are very aggressive with your secondary, using safeties and corners to blitz a little bit more, and that manufactures some additional sacks that maybe you wouldn't have had if you just stuck back with your secondary and played man-to-man coverage.
Yes. Now, I just want to say this. I think Jerry did a fine job in the offseason of bringing in guys, drafting and free agents to come in and complement what we had in JPP. And Lance, you know, everybody's hoping, you know, that the guy comes back and can give us something this year. But listen, you know, we got a good coach there. We got a good head coach. We got good assistant coaches. Jerry did a good job in bringing in these parts. But I think that, you know, we're going to need something out of the line, something more than we expected out of the linebackers. I think we're going to need scores. We're going to have to, and I think we've got the offense to do that. especially if Victor is healthy. All right.
Thank
okay,
you, Len.
So, you know, we move on, and we see what happens, and I feel better now that I talked to you guys.
All right. We feel better talking to you, Len. Have a good one, my friend.
Phone call.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Take
all right. We got three calls on the line here, Dave. We'll take these three guys, then we'll get Mickey up on the phone, all right? So we'll try to get through you quick, try to get you in before 12:35.
Just wanted to add one thing real quick before we get back to the lines. You know, we're focusing on sacks and the pass rush. You know, let's not forget, John, to me, what's going to set the tone for this upcoming season and what could do wonders for your defense and your pass rush, stopping the run and running the football.
Correct.
You know, if those two things click and those two things show consistency, then everything else should all of a sudden fall in line.
And I think the other big thing on defense, too, not to get off topic too much, is and on the 30 questions in 30 days. Excuse me,
yes.
It is. The one question, what defensive statistic has to improve this year if the Giants want to win? I bet you're going to go with run defense.
You read my mind.
I went a different direction.
Really?
I always do that.
I'm not surprised.
Well, let's
hear this one.
Allowing big plays. The Giants allowed more plays of 20-plus yards than any defense last year. Can't win football games doing that.
But you can
and
make
some of those
point.
On the ground, some of those in the air.
True. But if you stop the run, I think you also prevent those big
Absolutely.
Plays from happening.
Absolutely. But big plays are a big problem. And they have been for this defense for a couple years.
Yes.
That needs
That's
to get cleaned
one.
Up. All right, here we go. Three calls before we get to Mickey from DallasCowboys.com. Let's go to Bobby in Jersey. He's been holding the longest. Bobby, what's up?
Hey, what's going, guys? How are you today?
Doing well, Bobby. How about you?
Can you hear me? I'm on your phone.
Loud and clear.
Loud and clear, my friend.
All right, good. I talked to the guy on the phone. I'm going to generalize this because, you know, I know how, like you said, you guys work for the Giants. You got to do what you got to do.
Did he treat you okay, by the way? We're taking a survey on our phone scanners.
He was very understanding.
Okay.
Very,
very
good.
Make sure.
Yes.
Thank you.
The question is when I started to think about it yesterday, when different stuff started coming out, is what's the situation just in general NFL terms, any player, when the restricted free agent, is that what he becomes if we rescind the tender? Or is there a situation where we would possibly get compensation if we happen to somehow lose, or if anybody happened to somehow lose a player in this situation?
No. Once the Giants take the tender off of JPP, my understanding is he becomes an unrestricted free agent and any team could sign him and there would be no compensation
Correct.
For it.
Not even like, what's that thing at the end of the year?
You're talking about losing free agents. You're talking about where you get some additional complimentary draft picks.
Yeah.
No,
that's
what he's talking about.
Well, next year,
next year, based
on the NFL formula, you might end up getting a compensatory pick. That's
Correct.
What I was looking for
yeah.
to make up for that loss. Yeah, that his loss would get put into the equation in that situation, yes.
But to answer your question, you're not going to get a first-round pick
no.
in return for potentially losing somebody like JPP's caliber.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably – I don't remember ever seeing a how do you say it?
Compensatory. It's tough, I know.
Compensatory pick for a first-rounder. It's usually late-round pick, but I wasn't sure with him. And the other thing I wanted to ask you guys was, just in your own opinions, what would you rank, maybe not skill level right now, but for future potential purposes, defensive end depth charts, who you would want to see? Because I would really like them to, especially with this happening, I'd like them to give DeMontre a chance. I get it that he's terrible in the run game, but he's only going to learn from being on the field. Even with JPP, I would really like to see them put him at left end so that they could put DeMontre at right end, because JPP, we expect pass rush from him, pass rush. But he's really good at stopping the run. He can almost fill that Michael Strahan role of a couple of years ago where he's on that one side shutting down the run, period. And, hey, sacks, by all means, go for it. But he's doing his job over there. We got the speed guy on the other side. I also really like Kerry Wynn. Kind of just wanted to see where you guys were feeling on all these guys.
Yeah, Bobby, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. I think you're right. I think you have a bunch of guys that can rush the passer. I think you'll see DeMontre Moore play this year, assuming he's healthy, more than he has the last couple of years. They'll use him on third down. I don't think you're going to see him as a run stopper on first down now. Do I think his more natural position is right end than left end? Probably. But I think JPP's best position is also right end. He's your best player. Again, if healthy, that's where you're going to put him. So I think there's a tough tough give and take there. But I think you'll see Kerry Witt on the field. I think you'll see more on the field. I think Spagnuolo will rotate these guys to keep them fresh. So when they're in the fourth quarter and offensive linemen are playing their 75th snap, the Giants' defensive linemen are only playing their 45th snap, and that'll give the Giants an advantage.
And one other player that doesn't get mentioned much, John, because there is so much depth, let's not forget about George Selvey, who's not bad against the run,
excellent,
by the way.
Excellent run player.
And that's a player that, you know, if somebody's hurt or somebody misses time at the start of the season, you know, given his veteran experience, his familiarity with the division, his familiarity with Spags dating back to the Rams, you know, that's somebody that you can rely on.
I'll tell you what, in a theoretical world, week one, if JPP can't be on the field for whatever reason, I could see George Selvey being the starter on first down to try to stop the Cowboys running game.
I would not be stunned by that. Yeah.
I could see Selvey, Hankins, Ellis, and Robert Ayers as your four-starring.
I agree.
And he, you know what? Maybe even they'll put Jenkins there at one of the end spots.
I was
going to
say, don't cancel out Cullen Jenkins.
Absolutely
correct.
Not.
Yeah.
I could see all
could
those guys
being
could
go with the Vets.
Pick.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Patrick in North Carolina wants to talk about the guys that are behind JPP on that depth chart. Let's go to Patrick next. Patrick, what's up?
Hey, guys. I know this thing must seem like it's getting talked to death. So I just want to hit on a couple different things.
Go ahead.
When Kennard was first drafted, an interesting thought, and you guys can weigh in, was the fact that he could play both linebacker and defensive end. And he showed the ability to rush off the edge last season. If we don't generate enough pass rush from either Moore, or I know how Coughlin really doesn't like to insert rookies because he's old school in that way right off the bat, unless he's forced to, what do you guys think of seeing what Kennard can do with his hand in the dirt?
I don't think you'll see him as a hand-in-the-dirt pass rusher, to be honest with you, Patrick. Mm-hmm. I think you will see him as a consistent blitzing linebacker. I think you'll see him blitz out of that linebacker spot a lot. I think Steve Spagnuolo, based on his experience at USC as a hand-in-the-dirt type of rusher, which he was used there for a couple seasons, you'll see him blitzing a lot, but I don't think you'll see him as a traditional defensive end simply because the guys you mentioned, Odighizuwa, Kerry Wynn, Demontre Moore, Robert Ayers, these are all guys that have experience doing that at the pro level, except for Ola, obviously. And I think they trust them to do that better than Kennard, and they think Kennard can step in there and do an excellent job as a linebacker that can not only stop the run but also blitz out of that spot. And it gives Spagnuolo a lot of flexibility when you have a linebacker that can do all those things.
So let me ask you this then. Out of the current group that we have at the depth chart, you guys have seen these guys out in the practice field. You guys are there with the coaches. Who would you guys rate, and I know this is just opinion, but who would you guys say, now with JPP likely to miss time, with all, I know nothing's for certain at this point, and you guys can't say anything because there was nothing that came out in the news yesterday officially, but who would you rate as a top edge rusher with the ability to rush the edge off of the current group that we now have?
Here's the problem, Patrick, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. In the spring, Demontre didn't do a whole lot. This year he was coming back from the shoulder. And Ola didn't do anything until minicamp. So, yeah, and he was back at school, Demontre, too. That, too. So we didn't really see those guys do much. George Selvey was out there. Robert Ayers was out there. I think Ayers is your second-best defensive end. I also will say that straight up. After that, you're basing it off the spring. I guess Kerry Wynn's your next best pass rusher, and I guess Selvey's your next guy. But I think raw pass rushing skills, I have Demontre Moore on top of that list. I think raw pass rush skills, speed, quickness, athleticism, I think he's the guy.
Yeah, I think there's a tremendous amount of upside with Demontre Moore. Robert Ayers is a seasoned vet, and I would put him right up there, and he showed that last season, unfortunately, before he tore his pectoral muscle. Kerry Wynn also took advantage of his late-season opportunities. I think you have a few guys in the mix. I mean, to answer Patrick's question about, you know, in the event that JPP does miss some time, I think there's enough depth, there's enough talent here that Spags can mix and match players to still get a consistent pass rush. But I think it's also going to take some players in the secondary and linebackers such as Devon Kennard to maintain that consistency.
Let's go back to the phones, and we're joined by Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. And Mickey, John Schmuck, Lance Mendo with you here in New Jersey. And I got to imagine, this is the stuff that you're used to dealing with down in Dallas, with some of the crazy stuff that's happened down there the last 20 years. We're not quite used to this stuff up here.
Well, I suggested yesterday that Jason Garrett put up another sign in the locker room and put "Fear the Firework," okay?
All right,
gosh,
Mickey.
How does that happen? Come on.
It was funny. I've also heard a lot of Katy Perry jokes over the last couple weeks, too. All right, Mickey, let's get to it. The Giants have a franchise issue of their own with JPP. The Dallas Cowboys have one on their side with Dez Bryant. I've heard that in the last few days, Jason LaConfora, it's getting close. Last week, they might have an agreement by Monday. Now Adam Schefter says they haven't even talked this week. What do you got? What's the deal? Do you expect there to be anything done with Dez Bryant long-term by that July 15th deadline?
Well, at this point, I think the reports that were suggesting that the talks were heating up, that the talks were going on, were quite premature. My understanding is, I mean, as far as I know, the Jones family's they're out. They're on family vacation right now. And so if anything's going to happen, and I've been saying this, if anything's going to happen, you know, wait till July 13th, because neither side is likely to make a concession until a deadline's facing them, you know, staring them right in the face. And so around July 13th, I would think that that's if things were going to heat up, that's when they'll heat up. If they don't, then it tells me that the Cowboys are more than willing to play out the franchise tag for this season with Dez Bryant.
Mickey, speaking of playing out the franchise tag, obviously part of the rumors was that Dez Bryant would be willing to perhaps sit out a few regular season games, and the Cowboys do play the Giants in the opener. He did show up to minicamp, which is unique compared to some other players who were holding out. You know, what did that message send to you from being around the team, and, you know, do you believe that he will follow through potentially with a threat like that?
Well, he showed up for training camp only to watch. So it was a physical appearance and nothing more. He had a nice talk with Jerry on the sideline as the final mini camp practice was taking place. But other than that, I think it's just Dez. Can't stay away. Can't stand still. Wanted to show his teammates that he does care. As for sitting out a game or two, sitting out a game or two is not going to change anything, right?
Nope.
Because once July 15th passes, you can't get a long-term deal. And to me, any reasonable person on this God's green earth is not going to forfeit a guaranteed $754,000 a week to prove a point. It's just not going to happen. I just don't believe he would sit out. If he does, that'll be the biggest upset in NFL financial history.
Joined by Mickey Spagnuolo at DallasCowboys.com. I've been trying to tell the same people that I've worried about JPP potentially sitting out. Trust me, if he's able to go out there and play, he's going to play because he wants to get paid. One other player that I know has been in the headlines down there, Mickey, and it seems like an endless wait here. The NFL seems to be working on a slow motion clock when it comes to coming out with their rulings on a variety of issues. What's the word on Greg Hardy? Is there any expectation that this ruling from Henderson is going to come down anytime soon, so he can take some court action, and will he go down that route? There were some stories this week that he was, quote-unquote, losing the will to fight, depending on what this ruling is on his appeal. What's going on with Greg Hardy?
Well, let's go backwards on those questions. Let's start with losing his will to fight. Are you kidding me? I mean, here's my answer to all these things. Just follow the money, right? His contract is based on games on the 46-man roster. So, to me, he's going to fight to the bitter end not to forfeit that type of money, which is about $300,000, I'm off the top of my head right now, like $300,000 a game. And he's only got his base salaries, only a minimum. So everything in his contract is based on not only times on the 46-man game day roster, or the 53-man roster, but also on incentives, on sacks, Cowboys wins, things like that. So to me, you know, is he just going to sit there and go, you know what, I'll just play six games and accept it? I can't see that. I think that if the appeal is denied and the 10-game suspension is upheld, the NFLPA and his representatives will try to take this thing to court. As for is anything happening, who knows? You know, you guys are closer to it there than we are. We're a couple thousand miles away. My thought was that something would happen before the start of training camp. I think that would only be fair to the player, be fair to the team, even though the player can practice. There was part of me that was starting to come up with a conspiracy theory that the NFL was slow playing this so that when they finally make a decision, and then if it's not to the liking of Hardy, the NFLPA, and his representatives, and they want to take it to court, by the time they get it into court, it'll be into the season, and he'll automatically have missed games just waiting for a new decision from the court system. So,
that's interesting.
You know, that could be in play. I don't know, but it just seems like it's been long enough for them to come out and say, hey, we're denying the appeal, or this is what it's going to be.
I would agree with you, considering Roger Goodell came out today and said that Tom Brady's appeal decision will be coming out shortly, and Greg Hardy, obviously, his appeal was heard much before Tom Brady. Talking with Mickey Spagnola, columnist, also radio and TV talent for DallasCowboys.com. Mickey, another defensive player that Dallas is going to be without, we know for certainty, the first four games, linebacker Rolando McClain. There was talk about how Sean Lee, they may move to the outside this season to try to preserve him. Now that McClain is out of the picture for the first four games, how does this change the dynamics of the linebacking core?
Well, again, this ruling came down when everybody was gone. All the coaches were gone. You know, front office was gone. But my initial feeling on that is they had signed Jasper Brinkley in the offseason as middle linebacker insurance, and they had signed him before they ever came to agreement with Rolando McClain. So to me, they thought this guy had something that was kind of an insurance policy type guy. I think initially they'll give him a shot. He handled, without McClain here during the OTAs and the mini camps, he handled the middle linebacker spot. But again, Sean Lee wasn't working in team portions of the practices either. But I think they'll initially give him a shot to do it so they don't have to move too many things around from what their initial plan was. And if he handles it, then fine. Lee stays on the weak side. If they don't have confidence in what he can do, then you can always move Lee back in the middle and then try to fill in on the weak side because they like what Hitchens has done on the strong side, and he missed time during the off-season workouts with I think it was a groin injury, and so we didn't get a chance to see much of him either. So if you look at it, all three of their projected starting linebackers weren't working together during the off-season workout. So I think they'd like to keep Anthony Hitchens on the strong side, and if they can do it, then Lee on the weak and Jasper Brinkley in the middle for those four games.
I want to keep on the secondary. Mickey Spagnola, DallasCowboys.com, Dallas Cowboys TV and radio as well. The secondary, it's going to look a little bit different. They added Byron Jones in free agency. What position do you think he's going to play? Is that going to be dependent on whether or not Morris Claiborne is healthy when the season starts? He had basically the same injury as Victor Cruz had last year, both guys trying to come back from that patella tendon. How do you see the secondary playing out, and where do you think Claiborne and Jones will fit in when all is said and done? And is Brandon Carr going to be there? That's another guy that people have talked about, his contract potentially getting ripped up.
Right, and I think Brandon Carr is going to be there. If they were going to do anything with him, it would have been done, you know, long time ago. Would they like to do something with his contract? Absolutely. But again, you know, guys just don't come in the office and say, hey, yeah, you know what, I'm owed an $8 million base, I'll just take four. It doesn't happen, right? You guys know that.
Yep.
So if they want to reduce his base salary this year, they've got to give him a pop. They've got to say, okay, we'll guarantee this year, we'll guarantee your base salary next year, we'll sign you to an extra year, make a package, make it appeasing to the player so he doesn't have to walk into the locker room in front of all his buds and with his head down like he just got, you know, almost fired. So I think if anything happens, that's what will happen. It won't be that they cut him to save that $8 million because they don't need to do it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, he's on one side, Skandrick's on the other, and then we'll see where it goes from there, where Morris Claiborne is. He looks like he's healthy, ready to go. They held him out as for precautionary reasons during the OTAs and the mini camp. At the last mini, that last couple days of the mini camp, he looked like he was ready to go, but they didn't want to take any chances. Their idea was have this guy ready for the start of training camp. And remember, unlike Victor Cruz, not only did he tear his patellar tendon in his left knee, they had already, prior to that injury occurring, they had already decided that at the end of the season they were going to go in and try to do a scope on his right knee because the patellar tendon there looked like it was weakening. Wow. So he had two knee surgeries, one in the beginning of October, one in December. And when we were talking to him, I mean, the kid was on crutches. He barely could walk. He lost about 30 pounds. He told us he was 150 pounds in January. And it's like, are you kidding me? It's like, you're in a position we'd all like to be in. Eat as much as you want, as often as you want, right? So anyway, he had a long road to go, but he looks like he's there now. We'll see. He hadn't played football in a long time. I think that if he's healthy, then, you know, he's the third corner. If they go to a nickel with three corners and kick Skandrick inside in the slot, where I still think that's Skandrick's best shot. If he's not, then I think Byron Jones has worked there in the off season. Corey White has worked there in the off season. Tyler Patman has worked there. And the interesting thing, I thought, the way they were working the corners and some of their defenses is knowing that they're going to go up against a bunch of teams with pass catching tight ends. They worked on a lot of dime packages, and in the dime, in the slot, they had Skandrick, Corey White and Byron Jones, and had Byron Jones playing on the tight end.
Really?
So I think initially, I think that's one way to get him on the field. And frankly, I don't know what you guys think about nickel defenses, but I like one linebacker and two DBs in the slot instead of two linebackers, only one DB in the slot. And if they play more of that, if that's a way to get Byron Jones on the field, I think that's initially the way they'll try to use him.
Well, Mickey, speaking of the look of the defense, if you go back to last season, obviously two things jump out to me. The offense did wonders for the defense with time of possession, and the defense overall was extremely opportunistic, second in the league with 31 takeaways. What is the expectation of this year's group? Obviously, there were some personnel changes, but, you know, looking at their productivity last season, was that fluky, or can they actually repeat that type of success this year?
Well, I think that what will allow them to repeat or even get better is an improved pass rush. That's where they had problems. Quarterbacks too many times had the time of day in the pocket, thus signing Greg Hardy, thus trying to get Rolando McClain back on the team. Now, who knows how many games those guys are going to play. Also, drafting Gregory, a pass rusher, and knowing that DeMarcus Lawrence, last year's second-round pick, will be ready for the start of training camp. He only got to play seven games last year. So they're hoping what they've done has increased the pass rush. If they increase their pass rush, get more sacks, get more pressures on the quarterback, that defense will just naturally improve. And, you know, and I hear this thing about the offense keeping the defense off the field, and I've suggested, here's a novel idea, how about the defense getting better so the offense can spend more time on the field?
Hey, you know what, Mickey, that offense likes to be on the field because they know how to run the football. How do you see this running back position shaking out here? I know Darren McFadden was in and out during spring workouts. Ryan Williams, who I know a lot of people thought could be the dark horse sleeper to play, he was dealing with a knee injury. Then you have Joseph Randall, his off-the-field stuff. How do you see when all is said and done this running back position shaking out?
Well, I think initially Joe Randall's the guy. They're just because they're familiar with him. They saw him all during the off-season workouts while, as you mentioned, McFadden was nursing a hamstring. And, you know, 2 months ago, if you asked me that question, I wouldn't have hesitated. I'd say Joe Randall. But after I got a chance to see Darren McFadden in the mini camp practice, and, you know, you guys know there's no pads on. It's hard to judge.
Yep.
But I like what I saw from him. I like the burst he had, the vision, and his ability to cut in the hole without losing speed. But, again, he's not getting tackled. So We'll see when we get to training camp. I think that one will play out in training camp, but I think it's between those two guys for the main load of carries. Lance Dunbar, they've been using him as a nickelback, third down back, and I think they'd like to get him in that role more. They would have liked to do it more last year, but with the success that they were having running the football, they just didn't want to change things out. We were taking Murray out a whole bunch. So to me, Gary Brown had an interesting comment when someone said, asked him a question about, well, you know, what do you think about this running back by committee? And he says, I don't consider it running back by committee. He says, I consider it each guy's got a role, and they're going to play that role, and we just got to figure out in which role we want each guy. So, again, to be determined in training camp.
Talking with Mickey Spagnuolo of DallasCowboys.com. There's been a lot of speculation, Mickey, that, you know, perhaps as the running back group that stands right now, it may not look the same by the time we get to week one of the regular season. Do you anticipate some changes to the personnel in the backfield, or from what you just alluded to, they feel pretty content with the makeup of this current group? Because, I mean, personally, I was surprised they didn't draft a running back. There was a lot of speculation they would go that route.
Yeah, and I think that where they were in the draft at times and what their needs were at that particular time, I think they did what they thought was more necessary than getting a running back that, you know, maybe they didn't consider those guys once they got into the third round there better than what they already had. They have confidence in Joe Randall, but again, you know, we got to factor in the knucklehead factor. You know, is he going to mind himself? Can I go to sleep at night and know that when I come to practice the next day, my running back's going to be there? And there's always that with him. He's not a bad guy. He's just a little bit of a knucklehead. So we'll see where that one goes. And if the group stays healthy, I think they are fine as is. Now, if they should get some injuries, what they were doing was kicking tires in the off season, just kind of bringing in guys to see what would be available if they got into a position that they needed to bring somebody in. They didn't want to be like a couple years ago when they had all those injuries on the defense and started signing guys, defensive ends, you know, off the couch, guys that weren't even, you know, in anybody's training camp or had been in anybody's off-season workout and had to bring them in, George Selvey, and end up starting the guy. So this time around, they wanted to make sure they had their bases covered just in case.
Now, joined by Mickey Spagnuolo. And, Mickey, do you think they'll be able to get the same combined production from this group of backs that they got from, you know, Murray slash Dunbar last year, considering how good and well put together this offensive line is?
I think it's a possibility because of the offensive line. Now, I'm not saying anybody's going to run for 1,800 yards, because I'm sure last year if you had me on at this time, you were wondering what the Cowboys were going to do at running back, because no one expected that from Murray.
Right.
And frankly, no one expected the Cowboys to stick to their guns and say, yeah, we're going to run the football. You know, and I always said, well, if you run it well, you can stick with it. So, you know, they ran it well, they stuck with it, and Murray had one of those unbelievable seasons. Now, I don't know if any of these guys will get the opportunity to rush for that many yards, but I think they're capable of running the ball well enough to keep defenses honest. And, you know, if you look at last year, to me, what kept the defenses honest was the Cowboys' ability to throw the football to Dez Bryant. Because teams didn't want to sit there and go, you know what, we're playing eight-man fronts and we're going to load up against Murray and stop this offense. Well, Romo to Bryant will tear somebody apart. So they had the ability, because of that, to keep defensive honest. So as long as Dez Bryant's on the field, Tony Romo's healthy, with that offensive line, I think they can run the ball well enough to keep those defenses continue to be honest.
Mickey, final two quickies here before we let you go. Real fast, Tony Romo, health-wise, is he as good as you've seen him in a while? That's what the reports are. Number two, will Lael Collins, do you think, fight his way into the starting lineup on the offensive line, or will the Cowboys march out the same five they had last year with Ronald Leary at left guard?
At this point, I would say they march out the same five. They have Collins working at the left guard spot with the second team, and that's a starting point for him. remember, they're also going to need a swing tackle. Darian Weems is working there. He hadn't played all last year, so who knows if he can hold down the fort there. If not, then I think Collins moves over there as a swing guy, and then they spot him here and there. But I just think Ronald Leary's not going to just go to training camp and go, hey, yeah, go ahead, have my spot. There would be a fight there. As for Romo, yeah, this is, you know, I just wrote a story on Romo in the Star magazine, and basically it was the no-noise off-season for a change. There was no issues with Tony Romo. He wasn't rehabbing from anything. He was healthy. He took part in all the mini camp and training camp or OTA practices. He's ready to go. Doesn't look like they have to put a governor on him. No one's had any issues with him on who he dates or how much golf he plays. I mean, this is the quietest off season the guy, I think, has had since he took over the job full time in 2007. So yeah, he's good to go. And again, he looks healthy. He's happy. He's at ease. And I haven't seen any lists out there with the top 10 overrated players, and Tony Romo's one of them.
Mickey, appreciate the time, and condolences from me and Lance. Hopefully you guys can pull the little dagger that DeAndre Jordan stuck in your guys' backs down there over the next 24 hours.
Jeez, I've seen a lot of things happen to the Cowboys, but that one takes the cake.
That's a rough one, man. Oh, man, that's
rough.
Tough.
Especially when you planned out, you know, you made your plans based on that. You let Tyson Chandler go, and, you know, this is where you're going to spend your money. And at the last minute, you find out, well, I got all this money to spend, but there's no one to spend it on now. Yeah, they're reeling right now.
And then you throw $15 million at a guy over 4 years with a torn Achilles because DeAndre Jordan wants to play with him. I mean, my goodness, that is a rough situation. Mickey, we'll see you on September 13th in Dallas. The NFL wastes no time. Let's get the big games out of the way early. Have a great rest of the summer. Enjoy training camp, and we'll see you in September, my friend.
Thanks so much,
sure,
Mickey.
We'll talk to you between then. See you guys. Thanks a lot.
We'll do.
You got it.
Mickey Spagnuolo, our good buddy down there in Dallas. Always good to talk to Mickey.
Absolutely. Great stuff out of him.
All right, I think, do we still have a call on the line, Dave? To hold it on? All right, let's get to Rod in Virginia, who waited patiently through that interview. We'll get to him right now. Rod, what's going on, pal? Thanks for holding on for us.
Oh, hey, guys. You know, I just wanted to get on the phone and talk to you guys, and I wanted to touch on a couple of things.
Sure.
One of them is that I was wondering if Victor Cruz, because I heard all the talk about him coming back, and he's saying the pup list isn't an option for him. And I was just wondering, if he does come back, can he take maybe a back seat to Odell Beckham Jr.? I don't know how he'll handle that. But if he handles it well, that can be the best wide receiver duo possibly ever. If Cruz gets healthy and he gets back to that 2011 season that he had for us when we won the Super Bowl, I think we can have the most unstoppable wide receiver duo ever.
Well, Rod, here's the great thing about Victor Cruz, and Lance could speak to this too. He doesn't have an ego. Victor Cruz isn't going to sit there and pout because Odell Beckham Jr. is getting all the attention. He's going to go out there, he's going to do his job, and he's going to play as well as he possibly can. So I would not be concerned about that. I think they are going to be a great combination, and I don't think Victor Cruz will start on the pup list. I think he looks healthy. I think you'll see him in a couple of preseason games. And I think you'll be very happy with Victor Cruz's production this year.
And I would agree, okay, Rod. I mean, I think that you look at this group on paper, as you mentioned, you know, the expectations can very well be through the roof, understandably, considering how well they complement one another. Assuming that nobody gets hurt, nobody has to deal with the injury bug. Now, Eli Manning's probably licking his chops right now, thinking about all the guys that he could spread the wealth around.
Yeah, because I know Eli, he needs some help down there. You know, that's one of the big reasons we won the Super Bowl in 2007, 2011, because Eli had help and he had someone to throw to.
Yep.
And another thing I wanted to touch on is I know we've signed a lot of players. We got Landon Collins out of the draft. I was just wondering, how's that defense going to look now that JPP might miss the first season? And is his injury that bad? Because the way, you know, ESPN and NFL Network, it made it sound like his finger exploded. But I just want to know, how bad was his injury and how that defense is going to look?
You know, Rod, that's the thing. We don't know how bad the injury is. I don't think anybody knows how bad the injury is except for Jason Pierre-Paul and his doctors. And they, quite frankly, haven't called a press conference or been very forthcoming with exactly what his status is. You know, I'm not even sure you know, what knowledge the Giants have about it, to be quite honest with you. So I don't know how serious it's going to be. You saw the reports today. You know, some people say 6 weeks. Some people say, you know, 2 months. Who knows? I don't know if that's true. Nobody knows if that's true, to be quite honest with you. So he'll get back as quick as he can, and, you know, we'll see if the Giants keep that franchise tag on him. We'll know on July 15th if that's the case, and we'll go from there. So I know you want answers. I wish I could give them to you, but right now I just don't think anybody except for JPP and his doctors know really what his health situation is right now.
Okay. I just want to know, like, how's that secondary going to look up? Because, you know, we've had some troubles with the second, with the safety position, and letting a lot of teams go deep on us, and it's been hurting us with the deep ball. So I just wanted to know, how's that secondary going to look? Because I know Prince Amukamara, if he's healthy, I know he's going to produce a good season. And now that we got Dominique Rogers, Cromartie, I know he's a pretty good player, so I'm just wondering how they're going to stack up with Landon Collins. And is Landon Collins even going to start? Because I know he's been looking good in training camp, and he's been looking real good. I just wanted to know if he was going to start, come off the bench, or what.
Well, Landon Collins, I think, is in a great position to start, Rod, to answer your question, and appreciate the phone call.
Thanks so much, buddy,
for weighing in. He has the most versatility, I would say, of this group, considering how Alabama utilized him as a deep safety as well as a guy in the box. Now, Cooper Taylor is coming off injury-plagued seasons, so he's still trying to get his feet back under him. Nat Burhey's been limited with the calf injury. And some of the other guys that are in the mix, some are unproven, undrafted players and are veteran like Josh Gordy. So, you know, the competition's going to continue. And the good news in OTAs and minicamp has been the fact that they've pretty much utilized everybody that's been healthy, John.
Absolutely.
You know, everyone's had an opportunity. And that helps foster a great deal of competition, and may the best man win, as they utilize that cliche all the time. But I think Landon Collins, regardless of how the competition plays out, you can pretty much pencil him in as a starter. In terms of the overall secondary, and Rod alluded to this, John, you know, unfortunately the injury bug has struck them over the last few seasons. It's not as if the Giants haven't had the personnel. You know, DRC was hurt all year long last year. Yes, he played through it, and you got to give him a lot of credit, but he wasn't 100%. Prince went down via injury. So, you know, you're down essentially your two top corners. And now all of a sudden players that were coming in mid-season are thrown into starting roles. And it's not necessarily that they're not good. It's the fact that you need time to adjust to the new scheme, John. You can't expect guys to learn that overnight. So, you know, so much mixing and matching all of last season. I think that was a big contributing factor as to why there were some struggles on the defensive end. The goal is everybody stay healthy and also have four players that have defined roles and are in sync with one another. You know, that's going to be key, and that's why it's so important for the safety group as a whole, John, to be healthy once training camp starts, because if Nat Burhey has a realistic shot to be the other starter, he's got to get out there and get the reps so that he can play alongside Landon Collins.
And when you ask generally how this defense is going to look, I mean, do we really know? I mean, we've seen what they look like in T-shirts and shorts. That's great. What's the most important thing about defense? Being big and being physical. We have no idea how big and physical this defense is going to be yet. Why? You can't hit yet. So it's going to be hard to even say in training camp exactly what this defense is going to be. Now, we'll have an idea if they're going to blitz a little bit more. I think they will. What type of formations they'll run, man-to-man zone. We'll get a better idea with that because you can actually press wide receivers and stuff like that in training camp, so we'll see how much they do that. But until we get into game situations, and, you know, they're going to probably hide most of their stuff in the preseason. They're going to be pretty bland. They're not going to show their whole hand and put their cards on the table and say, here you go, NFL, scout our preseason games. This is what we're going to do. So we'll know exactly what this defense is going to look like on September 13th. And if you want to go by the first time Spag this year, it took about three games for the defense to get their act together and figure out exactly what they're doing. So we might not know exactly what this defense looks like until October 4th at Buffalo, for goodness sake. So it's a work in progress, Rod. We'll keep you updated on it, and that's about it. We're about at the end of the show here. Real quick, Lance, just off of what Mickey said with the Dallas Cowboys, I think the secondary is big for them. If you want to look at the keys for the Cowboys this year, secondary on defense, can they get to the quarterback on the defensive line without blitzing? Because generally, those Marinelli defenses don't blitz a lot. You want to get there with the front four. When does Hardy get back? Can Randy Gregory, can DeMarcus Lawrence get to the quarterback? And how does that secondary play out? I think offensively, they'll be extremely similar to what they were last year, even though the names of the running back spot might be different. I think they'll run their offense almost identically. I think Des Bryant's going to be there when the season starts. As Mickey said, I'd be surprised if he throws away money for no reason. It's just a matter of if they can get pressure on the quarterback, if they can defend in the secondary. If they can do that, I think the Cowboys will be pretty darn good.
I don't know if there's anything for me to add. I think you pretty much covered everything. I would agree. They win the battle in the trenches. That should certainly help the running game's cause. In terms of defense, one thing that I picked up off of what Mickey said that was interesting, perhaps their reliance on more defensive backs this season, John, as opposed to relying on three linebackers. And you know what? On the surface right now, given the fact that McLean's out for the first four games, Sean Lee, you don't know really what you're going to get out of him because he's been struck by injuries left and right, and everybody else is somewhat unproven. Even a guy like Hitchens is still young. It may not hurt, given the fact that it seems like they have better options in the secondary, to perhaps utilize the additional slot corner or even another corner and try to perhaps slow down passing offenses that way.
But can you stop the run that way?
Well, of course. I mean, that's going to be a major issue.
That's the trick.
Well, the only
it's
thing
that
It's
great to throw eight DBs out there. Can you stop the run?
I agree. I mean, it's great to be creative. You're right. But if you dig too deep into your bag of tricks and you have no versatility, that's going to be a problem. That's why I'm sure one of the things they're probably asking themselves, if we do throw out all these corners, how good are they in terms of additionally helping to stop the run? If they feel they're two-way players, then I think it'll work. If you're just a corner that is going to be a man-to-man guy and stop the pass, you're right. You're going to probably give up some big running plays.
Right. Byron Jones did play safety a little bit at UConn, so you think he can tackle. Barry Church is an excellent tackling safety that they have on their roster. And Sean Lee's a good cover guy, linebacker. I imagine he would probably be the one linebacker on the field in those situations. So, again,
because he can run side to side more so than other guys.
Right. So, I think it's all about the Cowboys' defense. Can you rush the pass or can you defend the pass? If they can do that, especially against teams like the Eagles and the Giants in their division, throwing the Redskins with DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon, I think they'll be very formidable. So that's our shows for this week, folks. The office is closed tomorrow. We'll be back on Monday. Lance and Anita have you next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then Tino and Anita next Thursday right here on Giants.com. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.
Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Oh, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.